This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. Earlier in the show, we toured through the foreign outposts of the Team Trump worldview. Next stop, Ukraine, where a friend of ours from down the hall, Ilya Marets, co-host of WNYC's Trump Inc. podcast, happened to find himself just as the story began to break. In a new episode, Ilya and co-host Andrea Bernstein in New York follow a trail of corruption, investigations, and faux investigations. And they'll take it from here.
Okay, so should I read it first and then we could talk?
Yeah, do you want to read it? Read it in peace.
I'll read it.
Dateline, Kiev, Wednesday, September 25th, just after 5 p.m. local time. I'm at the offices of the not-for-profit Anti-Corruption Action Center, ANTAC. I'm with Daria Kalinyuk, ANTAC's co-founder and executive director.
Oh, that's craziness.
The White House has just released detailed notes of a call between President Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
I'm supposed to give you a call, and I'm also going to have Attorney General call, and we'll get to the bottom of it.
On that call, Trump asks Zelensky to, quote, do us a favor, investigate his political rival, Joe Biden. With a bright orange beanbag chair and a staff of mostly young people, ANTAC has the feel of a small startup. Everyone here, not just Daria, is furiously digesting the document.
Mm-hmm. So is it okay for the President of the United States to have Attorney General of the United States to call the President of Ukraine to discuss investigation? Is that okay?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, but I believe you are a lawyer.
It is actually very astonishing to me to see that something like that is happening in the United States, from which we are trying to learn how to make democracy.
If you Google Daria Kalinyuk, one of the first images that comes up is a woman holding a bullhorn surrounded by police. Her t-shirt reads, "F*** corruption." Today, she's wearing business attire. Throughout our hour-long conversation, Kalinyuk maintains a state of outraged disbelief.
Did you ever think that Ukraine would be at the center of an impeachment proceeding against an American president?
I would never imagine that.
Here's Trump Inc. co-host Andrea Bernstein in New York.
A little about how Ilya happened to be in Kiev right now. For over a year, the Trump Inc. crew has been talking about Ukraine, the role it plays for Trump and the people around him. He's taken money from Ukrainian oligarchs. His former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, worked there for a decade and went to prison because of his work there. Michael Cohen has ties to the country, and Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, has been making appearances in Ukraine for over a decade. We kept asking ourselves, why? What is it about Ukraine? So Ilya planned a trip months ago, and as it turned out, he arrived right after we learned that Ukraine was the country in the mysterious whistleblower report. As the story was breaking wide open, Ilya landed in Kiev.
Somewhere here is Paul Manafort's office, number 4.
He went there to follow a trail of corruption that started with President Trump's campaign chief, Paul Manafort, and led to President Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani.
What I don't see anywhere are newspapers. Nobody's reading them. Nobody's selling them.
Before we begin, a note. Politicians in Ukraine routinely use prosecutions not as fact-finding missions, but as bludgeons to destroy opponents. opponents like Darya Kalinyuk's anti-corruption group, ANTAC, supported by the European Union. Rudy Giuliani mentioned ANTAC in an interview with Chris Cuomo on CNN in September that went viral.
The only thing I asked about Joe Biden is to get to the bottom of how it was that Lutsenko, who was appointed, dismissed the case against ANTAC, not-for-profit called ANTAC. Well, whatever the hell it was, ANTAC.
Kalinyuk told Ilya that her group is being attacked because it's fighting corruption.
We are actually exposing grand corruption schemes in Ukraine. We are exposing also Western enablers of Ukrainian kleptocrats. We are pain in the ass for many powerful people here, but they can just...
In the summer of 2018, the Mueller investigation was bearing down. Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal lawyer, began talking about putting out a, quote, counter-report. That never materialized. What did happen, we know from the whistleblower report, is that Rudy Giuliani began to reach out to current and former Ukrainian prosecutors in late 2018. Giuliani was developing a counter-narrative to Mueller, arguing it was Ukraine that interfered with the 2016 election on behalf of Hillary Clinton. While he was at it, Giuliani began encouraging Ukrainians to investigate Joe Biden, and they seemed game. In the middle of this, Attorney General William Barr released his summary of the Mueller report, followed by the report itself. Days after that, a new Ukrainian president won the election in a landslide, Volodymyr Zelensky. A few months later, Trump short-circuited the normal process and personally ordered a hold on military aid to Ukraine. And then, one day after Special Counsel Robert Mueller testified before Congress, Trump got on the phone with President Zelensky. That's when he asked for that favor, looking into the Bidens. In September, we all learned of the whistleblower complaint. Then Nancy Pelosi announced an impeachment inquiry. Then we saw the documentation of that Trump-Zelensky phone call. And then we read the complaint. Then, it's now. There's one more thing about Zelensky you should know.
Before he became U.S. president, Donald Trump was famous from TV. Same deal with the new Ukrainian leader, Volodymyr Zelensky. He starred in a popular TV show about a history teacher whose anti-corruption rant goes viral and propels him to the presidency. It's called Servant of the People. Zelensky's real-life political party is also called Servant of the People. Here's a clip from the show. It's the moment when Zelensky's character learns he's won.
Василий Петрович Голобородько?
Да.
Доброе утро, господин президент.
Good morning, Mr. President.
After communism collapsed in the Soviet Union, state-owned properties like pipelines and factories were put in private hands. Everyone was supposed to benefit. Instead, a small number of businessmen hoarded assets and became the oligarchs. Their fortunes depended and still depend on keeping control of Ukraine's natural resources and building monopolies and working the government.
This is... How deep is this?
370 meters.
It's incredible.
One big prize for the oligarchs was the largest steel mill and iron mine in Ukraine, in a town called Kryvyi Rih. It's an overnight train ride from Kiev.
One machine turns solid ore into glowing liquid metal at a temperature of 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit. Then it's lifted into a giant cauldron and poured into steel bars. This place is a good example of how privatization can go wrong. In 2004, the factory was awarded at auction, not to the highest bidder, a multinational company, but to two Ukrainian businessmen who put in a bid of just half as much money. One of them happened to be the son-in-law of the president. The sweetheart deal for this steel plant caused so much outrage it was later voided and reversed. In 2005, the mill was put up for auction again. This time, an international steel giant offered the most and won.
The oligarchs were unhappy. They wanted control of the natural resources. And to get that, they had to control the government. And they found just the man to help them do it. A man with decades of experience supporting corrupt leaders across the globe. Paul Manafort. At the time, 2005, 87% of Ukrainians were against the oligarch's candidate, Viktor Yanukovych. Manafort turned that around.
There's a term people here use for Manafort's profession, polytechnolog, political technologist. Manafort did polling. He tested messages. He got Yanukovych, who previously spoke coarsely and had assault and robbery convictions in his past, to wear a good suit, get a good haircut, and speak Ukrainian. Because he was from Eastern Ukraine, he spoke Russian. In 2010, the oligarch's man won the presidency. And Paul Manafort went to work for the new leader. He secretly lobbied the U.S. government. Yanukovych locked up a political opponent. Then Manafort hired a law firm to write a bogus report justifying her prosecution. All the while, Yanukovych was stealing massive amounts of money from the Ukrainian people.
The people protested. In February 2014, Ukrainians overthrew Yanukovych. He fled by helicopter to Russia. That's when Ukrainians discovered Yanukovych's otherworldly palace, the house that corruption built. Now it's a museum.
And yes, that's the main road to Mezhigorye.
The road from Kiev to Mezhigorye passes through a tangle of high-rise housing estates and shopping plazas. My guide is Anastasia Lazo, a tour guide based in Kiev.
It was really pissing people off because they were getting late. And
she learned English as a teenager in Alaska.
That's the funny part. Everyone is laughing like, Alaska, really? It's not even the United States. But, well, it is.
The grounds of the estate are vast. There's a 9-hole golf course, a huge garage for Yanukovych's vintage cars, and a laboratory where, Lazo says, the president's food was tested to make sure it wasn't poisoned. After Yanukovych fled Mezhigorye in 2014, protesters and journalists found a trove of his financial documents dumped in the water. They dried them off in the sauna. The interior walls here look like the inside of a log cabin. Almost everything else is pure opulence.
There's the sports complex, there's the helipad, there's the big floating restaurant, and this is some kind of water massage. This table can cost from 50 to 100,000 euros. Salt usually grows in the natural conditions in the underground caves or somewhere. But guy wanted a salt cave here in his house.
Oh my God, look at this coat of armor.
Exactly. That's the last room. That will be the door where we get out. You can see people get out like in silence. At the beginning, they like got excited, and then as a result, they're like, okay.
People do look a little stunned as they emerge into the sunshine.
By the summer of 2016, Manafort had a new gig. After Yanukovych, he went to work running Donald Trump's campaign. Here's an interview Manafort did in the summer of 2016 with CBS News.
So to be clear, Mr. Trump has no financial relationships with any Russian oligarchs.
That's what he said. That's what I said. That's obviously what our position is.
Manafort was the go-to for campaign interviews. Then, in August of 2016, a story broke in the New York Times. It said Manafort was paid $12.7 million in off-the-books payments from Yanukovych's political party. Accounts of these payments turned up in a so-called black ledger. Three years after the black ledger was made public, Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani are on a campaign to question its origins and thus vindicate their since-convicted colleague, Manafort, and to smear their opponents and undermine the U.S. special prosecutor, Robert Mueller. To do that, Giuliani spoke to three current and former Ukrainian prosecutors, Viktor Shokin, Yuri Lutsenko, and Nazar Kolodnitsky. So remember those names, Shokin, Lutsenko, Kolodnitsky.
I listened to the poets.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. In Kiev, Ilya met with two journalists, Aubrey Belford and Tanya Kozareva.
So the way this started is, you know, I've been based in Kiev for just over a year. I'm an investigative journalist.
This is Aubrey Belford.
And I read this story in The Hill by John Solomon, who's a former AP reporter. It basically laid out this scandal where Joe Biden pressured Ukraine to fire its chief prosecutor because he was investigating a company where his son, Hunter, served on the board. And I thought, wow, this looks like a real scandal. I'm going to investigate it. And my investigation lasted for about 30 minutes because it soon became pretty apparent that the guy that got fired, Viktor Shokin, basically everyone wanted him fired. The State Department wanted him fired. European countries wanted him fired. The IMF wanted him fired. Ukrainian anti-corruption activists wanted him fired. People protesting on the streets wanted him fired. And, you know, Joe Biden did put pressure on to get him fired. But to say that he was an anti-corruption fighter, it's absurd on its face. This guy was fired for being massively corrupt and for protecting corrupt people. But when I read it, you know, two things popped into my mind, which was, firstly, this story doesn't check out. And secondly, that this story seems ideally calibrated for U.S. politics. And then Giuliani goes on cable news and he says it. He says, I'm working on this.
Let me tell you my interest in that. I got information about 3 or 4 months ago that a lot of the
Giuliani was working with Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman, two men who emigrated from the Soviet Union. Now they live in Florida. Parnas has worked in real estate, stocks, consumer electronics, with a history of business disputes. In 2017, he was ordered by a federal judge to pay $500,000 to investors in a movie called Anatomy of an Assassin. To date, he hasn't paid it. Fruman, the other businessman, has an export operation, owns hotels and nightclubs. He has a beach club in Odessa on the Black Sea called Mafia Rave. Recently, Parnas and Fruman started giving hundreds of thousands of dollars to Republican causes. Their donations to a Republican super PAC in 2018 are the subject of a complaint before the Federal Election Commission. It was Parnas and Fruman who connected Giuliani with his sources in Ukraine, those prosecutors we mentioned.
The ex-general prosecutor, Shokin, and Shokin's successor, Yuri Lutsenko.
Can you talk about, like, what the general prosecutor is and does in Ukraine? Is it like a rough equivalent of our attorney general in the United States?
Prosecutors in Ukraine often act like a protection racket. Prosecutors routinely will bring falsified or drummed up cases against people and then drop them for money. We learn as journalists pretty early on to know which prosecutors you can trust and which ones are, frankly, serial liars. The guys that Giuliani is relying on have very bad reputations.
Can you give me any examples?
Well, I mean, Shokin was dismissed by Parliament after a massive public outcry because he was strangling off anti-corruption efforts here. Lutsenko...
His successor.
He's not a lawyer.
Tanya Kozareva.
He's not a lawyer?
He's a politician who just got into the office.
Lutsenko has been widely accused of slow-walking corruption cases and of cooking up cases against innocent parties who were out of favor with Ukraine's moneyed class. He denies this.
Giuliani's third prosecutor source is the special anti-corruption prosecutor, Nazar Holodnitsky, who has himself been investigated for...
Collaborating
with people under investigation for corruption, telling them what the investigation has and what to anticipate.
Holodnitsky was recorded tipping off suspects ahead of searches. Giuliani spoke with these current and former prosecutors, Lutsenko, Holodnitsky, and Shokin, about a dozen times. Giuliani collected the information they gave him about Trump's political opponents and passed it along, widely discredited though it was, to the American president. We reached out to the White House, Giuliani, the three Ukrainian prosecutors, Parnas and Fruman. The only one who commented was Lutsenko, who said, without elaboration, that the whistleblower's allegations about him are false. Giuliani has been subpoenaed by the House Oversight Committee. Among the associations they're examining, Parnas, Fruman, the three prosecutors, and Giuliani's business partners in Ukraine. There was someone trying to focus attention on the corruption of Ukrainian prosecutors, the American ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch. She called for Kolodnitsky to be fired. She said, nobody who has been recorded coaching suspects on how to avoid corruption charges can be trusted to prosecute those very same cases. In May, Trump abruptly recalled Yovanovitch. There is now no U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. This brings us to the central subject of Giuliani's campaign. It's the idea that the Democrats and some Ukrainians interfered in the 2016 election in Hillary Clinton's favor. They did this, in Giuliani's version of events, by forging a document, the so-called Black Ledger, that showed secret payments from Yanukovych's party to Paul Manafort. Remember, Manafort is serving prison time because of the trail of corruption Robert Mueller uncovered, beginning with those payments he took from Yanukovych, bank fraud, tax fraud, money laundering, conspiracy against the United States. But Giuliani says the Black Ledger is a fake. Here's Giuliani in a May 2019 interview on Fox News, pointing a finger at a man named Sergei Lyschenko. He's not the prosecutor, Lutsenko.
Found to be involved in assisting the Democrats with the 2016 election.
Okay, so
a gentleman,
let me ask
I'll give you his name.
Your decision not to go.
Let me okay. finish. A gentleman by the name of Lyschenko.
Yes.
Who supplied a black book that was found to be fraudulent.
Okay.
And never used because it was a fraudulent, incriminating statement that was totally untrue.
Of course, it's not fraud. It's a real document, and of course, I'm not an enemy of American government, and I never interfered in American elections.
In Kiev, I spoke to the man who helped to bring the Black Ledger to light, Sergei Lyschenko, an investigative journalist and former member of parliament. I met him in a cafe in a hip part of the city.
It is part of conspiracy created by Giuliani, conspiracy theory, which is not based on relevant and real information, because Black Ledger went through expertises in Ukraine, and the expertise proved that it's a real document. And signatures of people signed this book, real one. But to construct the conspiracy theory, Giuliani, he decided to spin this. It's fake Black Ledger and so on.
Lyschenko is extremely tall, with thick-framed glasses. He turns 40 next year. Lyschenko says to promote his theory, Rudy Giuliani seized on the fact that an administrative court found Lyschenko acted illegally in publicizing the Black Ledger. Giuliani ignored the fact that the ruling was overturned on appeal.
But it did not stop Giuliani, and he continues saying this fraud.
By casting doubt on the Black Ledger, Rudy Giuliani is trying to rewrite history. Paul Manafort, in Rudy's telling, is transformed from a political technologist who profited from a corrupt system and cheated on his taxes into the victim of a sinister anti-Trump plot, a plot that eventually led to Robert Mueller's investigation. But if Paul Manafort's actions are obscured in America, if he's seen as a victim, Lyschenko says that will have a chilling effect on the people who are pushing to make Ukraine more democratic, open, and fair.
Whistleblowers or anti-corruption activists who are ready to fight against the system, to provide this information, now will remember what happened with people like me or like NTAC leaders who were under pressure for the last 4 years. And they will decide twice or triple. Should they start this anti-corruption activity, or it's better to keep silence, to keep eyes blind?
When we started our interview, Lyschenko was rubbing his eyes and glancing at his phone. He's been doing back-to-back news interviews for days. Suddenly, it seems, the world is interested in what he has to say about graft and disinformation.
For me, it's another evidence that corruption is not just Ukrainian problem, but it's a global problem. And sometimes corruption, it's like a butterfly effect. Something happened in Ukraine, and tsunami happened in U.S.
Lyschenko has offered to testify before Congress about his experience with the Black Ledger and the disinformation campaign.
Aubrey Belford, the reporter we spoke with earlier, says Giuliani's Ukrainian partners have been adept at mixing truth with falsehood. The result is facts that are not really factual.
And Americans have picked it up and run with them. Whether this is a disinformation campaign that was all designed to turn out exactly as it has, I think is a little bit far-fetched. But what it does show is that this kind of stuff is currency. It's very potent currency. And, you know, I mean, it worked. They wanted to create a splash with this, and they have.
What's it like living in a place where, like, nobody knows what's true?
You know, this is a part of the world where disinformation is really, like, part of life. And, you know, I mean, you guys are going to know what it's like soon enough.
Andrea Bernstein and Ilya Meretz are co-hosts of the Trump Inc. podcast, a co-production of WNYC and ProPublica.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Lana Casanova-Burgess, Michael Loewinger, Leah Feder, John Hanrahan, and Asta Chattavetti. We had more help from Charlotte Gartenberg, and our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Sam Baer and Josh Hahn.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.